Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia, excuse me. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the website, and listen to the live stream from that point. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, it's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening, and listen to the live stream there. Or you can download the TuneIn app, and on your computer, if you're on your desktop or on your tablet, you can just go straight to TuneIn. But if any of your other devices, you can download TuneIn as a free app. And in that search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. You'll see the icon, and you can stream the program even into your car. That's Time for an Awakening with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for Awakening radio program. There you'll see a lot of interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. It's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there also. Just put that in your address bar. Just type in timeforawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com. It'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Yeah, you'll see more interesting content, articles, podcasts of the programs, both programs, Time for Awakening, also Revive, that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, the floor is yours. We're in open form tonight. Anything on your mind, give us a call. The lines are open at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And we'll be back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before you your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And as I said before, the floor is yours tonight. We're in open forum. Anything on your mind that you've been thinking about this past week, give us a call. It's always interesting when we can conversate with our listening audience. And before we get things kicked off, I want to welcome in my co-hosts and Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum, 7th and Arch here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us on the line. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing there, Brother Elliot?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Doing fine this evening. I'm ready to be energized by our audience and being able to interact and learn and keep us awake and aware about what's going on in our surrounding as we build our new world.
Before we get started, we're in open forum this evening, but before we kind of open things up on the program, I want to read a community announcement from the African American Freedom and Reconstruction League on Saturday, June 17th. Wait a minute, hold up. Okay, yeah, I got the right. Saturday, June 17th, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Joseph P. Coleman Library, which is at 68th West Shelton Avenue here in Philadelphia between Germantown and Green Street. It'll be a special program. Dr. Jerome E. Fox, his book, Addicted to White, The Oppressor in League with the Oppressed, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor, I'm sorry. Psychologist Jerome E. Fox, Ph.D., calls on black people around the world to take action in his insightful and inspiring analysis of race relations. In his recently published book, Dr. Fox studies white oppression and its effect on black culture and empowerment, suggesting that an addiction to five core values, which inherently promotes acceptance of white domination, may be at the root of the problem. Imagine being able to change race relations forever with just a simple shift away from these five values. Dr. Fox knows it's possible and urges black people everywhere to start practicing recovery strategies now. Dr. Fox has treated substance abusers for over 20 years and now focuses on writing and organizing around the theme of his book. Books are available for sale at the event. Bring your family and friends in this teach-in. You're welcome to ask questions and discuss his insights. Again, that's Dr. Jerome Fox, Ph.D. The book, Addicted to White, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor. Again, that event here in Philadelphia, Saturday, June 17th, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Joseph P. Coleman Library, which is 68 West Shelton Avenue, between Germantown Avenue and Green Street, the library there, the Joseph Coleman Library. Admission to the public is free. And for more information, you can call 215 215-474-3577. Again, that's 215-474-3577. Brother Richard, I know you read the book. I have the book. I haven't read it as of yet. It's a lot of things that we could discuss in reference to the Dr. Jerome Fox analysis. I'd like to touch base on that. Maybe a little later on in our open forum discussion, though.
Right.
Because I know that you've read the book.
Yeah, so Dr. Fox, me and Dr. Fox have been going back and forth in the development of his approach in dealing with our recovery for many years, and been able to see what he's developed as a process. I think it's really critical that we understand that this here piece about our values of what we believe, how they maintain our oppression. And I think what he does is unearth them in the sense of being able to show us what we may do in our thinking and behavior, reflect values that really maintain our, as he puts it, our domination by others. So I think that we can, as we go through, we can interject even the values that he says bring up, especially since we're in open forum. So that would be great.
Yeah, I'd like to come back and touch on that, some of those things. And in the future, hopefully we can get Dr. Fox on the program to kind of talk about the his book and some of the things that he asserts in Addicted to White. I do agree with his premise, by the way. He put it in a way of as calling it Addicted to White, but it is a mental block that our people are suffering in a lot of instances. And we'll talk about that a little later on. We can get the calls involved. It's open forum. You can jump in. Lines are open to 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. A couple of news stories I just don't throw out there, Richard. We talked last week about some of the black politicians screaming for Donald Trump to be impeached. And that's basically all you heard from was black politicians, particularly Al Green and Maxine Waters, calling for his impeachment. But earlier this week, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, it was a statement put out, press statement put out by Cory Booker, I guess in his mind, the next Obama wannabe. Some of these black politicians aspire to be a Barack Obama type because they see that they can be accepted by white folks. But Cory Booker put out a statement telling politicians to back off the impeachment talks.
I'm not surprised. Not surprised.
And making statements about impeachment. Now, being that there wasn't any white politicians screaming for his impeachment, the only one who even talked around it was McCain, and he didn't talk about his impeachment, but it was black politicians that were saying it. So Cory Booker got his instructions to tell black politicians to back off the impeachment talk. So let's see what happens behind the instructions that the overseer gave to Stephen to tell the rest of the plantation, and see if they adhere to the instructions of Stephen in reference to backing off some of the statements that black politicians have been making. It'll be interesting to watch that play out.
It's two things in that, as far as this here, as you've been bringing up for the last couple of weeks, this emphaticness for the expression of not impeachment. And if I'm not mistaken, my memory served me correctly, that's all they talked about with Obama. I mean, as far as that he should be impeached or something around one thing or the other. So why the skittishness around that? And the other thing is this, Mr. Booker, I just I like to see, as you were saying, you know, just explore what makes him think he has juice. I guess he's the new kind of political presidential black person in the way he's presenting himself, because I just don't, I have to say it in this vernacular, I just don't feel him. But they making his speeches is phenomenal, and he's coming out there. So I like to see at some point the exploration of what is it that Cory Booker, Senator Booker, think he has to make him presidential worthy.
Well, he got a lot of Jewish backing behind him, and a lot of that translates into money. So, you know, he speaks to a lot of those issues. You can see a lot of ADL and B'nai B'rith and other Jewish organizations like Cory Booker. So just that's a situation to keep an eye on, dealing with him. Black folks like that are very dangerous when it comes to our issues, and they play on some of our people being ignorant of certain things. And I'm not talking about our people being stupid, just not being aware of certain things. You know, if you don't have the proper information, then that makes you ignorant of a situation. That doesn't make anyone stupid. So I just wanted to make that clear. I think a lot of these black politicians play on some of our people's ignorance of issues. And a lot of that goes to a lot of, especially media on the terrestrial side, don't discuss all of these type of things and these type of issues with a black audience. You go in every major city and all you hear is foolishness in the mornings and in the early afternoons with, you know, with disc jockeys that spin records and laugh and joke and do satires instead of talk about these issues. But if you turn the dial on some of these white stations, you do hear terrestrial programs talking about serious issues dealing with white America. They're not talking about anything dealing with black America unless it's some type of a slanderous or you know, issue disparaging black America. They're not dealing with any issues that are important to us, but they're always talking about issues that are important to them.
And that's why it's so important to kind of explore, as you say, these politicians in various ways, because it's so important to see the issues that are affecting us are if for those who want to universalize it, employment, especially amongst young males, like healthcare, like education, the question around seniors. I mean, these are issues, even if the people or black politicians spoke to the black community and came up with policy recommendations that are politically directed, they would benefit. But it's some, you know, I think you use the word skittishness to even use the word that I'm using the example of black people or the black constituency or citizenry to even raise the policy issue. And that's what it frustrates me so much when I listen to these guys, because they try to be so neutral. And we see the outcome is that our issue never, structural issues never get addressed by them.
Yeah, and I guess Black Caucus, the California Black Caucus, the National Black Caucus, and Maxine Waters is still waiting on that apology by the DNC for pulling out her mic, cutting off her microphone. I guess that apology is still waiting on it. So maybe they haven't got the memo yet. So we'll give them some more time. You know, in the middle of the week, they had a white comedian. I think her name is Kathy Griffin, that put out on social media effigy or a prototype or whatever of Donald Trump's head, bloody head being cut off, and she was holding it and it made its way through social media. And then she was attacked for what she did. White politicians and all kind of scolded her, and she apologized. And it came out during, although, you know, it was already known, it came out that threatening the life of a sitting president was a Class A felony. We also see that I think threatening the life of congressmen or senators was a little below that, but it was still a felony punishable by 5 to 10 years in prison. It's kind of funny that the threats that were played for Associated Press by the Congressman Al Green, where some of these racist bigots threatened his life, clearly threatened his life, that, you know, it's just an atmosphere. I don't think they've tried to find out who these guys are, trace down calls or anything else. So I guess when it comes to black politicians, threatening their life goes by the boards. But, yeah, we see that she was scolded a little bit. I think she supposedly lost her job on CNN. But they'll take care of her own. They'll wait maybe a couple months after things blow over, and she'll have something else. So she won't be penalized to the point where she's going to really be hurt behind this. But she'll just know better next time. Don't go that far when you're talking about one of your own brothers and sisters. You can make a joke, take it, you know, take it to one level, but don't step over the line. So I just want to kind of throw that out there so we can kind of just pay attention to how white folks kind of operate and do things.
And it's so important for us to be clear, you know, how this, the structure, the media structure of the projection of white supremacy and the effect of the whole apparatus, and as you kind of laid out with Congressman Al Green, there is no, even talk about going after anybody, or no talk about how even defining those different classes of abuse of legal, from a legal perspective, of a person being abusive to a sitting president or a congressperson, which shows how we're maintaining a devalued position in the society. Because even if we don't register it, as you're letting us, you know, be recognizing it, for those of us who are hearing it and don't really really identify with it, it still registers the point that you made, that a black person's life, even in sitting in one of the most supposedly powerful positions within the state apparatus, is really has no value. And there is no public projection of that there is a line that has to be drawn. And again, we can use the past president as a, I mean, I don't think anybody has been, I mean, even Clinton wasn't raked over the stove, as they say, as much as Obama was, in every kind of way, him and his family, by all kinds of people. And it was seen as acceptable. And I'm not no cheerleader for Obama, in no way. But I think that we have to, as you're bringing up, we have to be consciously and vigilant about the mind games that they project in these images in relationship to the value of black life, black political persons, agents, or black individuals on the street, when we see the continuous assaults amongst black people, whether it be by, they call alt-right people, or by the police, that this, and it's a historical, systemic, and, you know, we have to continue to make, I believe the audience has to be continually aware of how we are, some say programmed, but influenced to be accepting of that in one way or another.
Yeah, you know, one other story, Richard. The it's a Nigerian journalist that's over there covering, I think it's World Cup games. Cameroon is facing Russia, and some of our listening audience can come follow up on the story, because I saw it early in the week, and I might be a little hazy on the facts of the game, but I do know that a Nigerian journalist was there covering Cameroon facing Russia in these World Cup games, and they were having a parade, in reference to the games. Because, soccer in around the world is big. It might not be huge here, but it's huge in other countries. Mm-hmm. So they were having a parade in this Russian city in reference to this game between Cameroon and some city in Russia. And they had people in the parade, several people in the parade that was marching around in blackface and had bananas around their necks in reference to the Cameroon team, and had the Cameroon colors on the shirts of the players. And the Nigerian journalists complained to the AP, complained to the Russian government. Her complaints went on deaf ears, so she put a lot of stuff out on social media, and I think she put the things out on YouTube so people can see the parade and these Russians marching around with the Cameroon colors on for their soccer team in blackface and Afro wigs with bananas around their necks. So, some of our people get caught up in all this Trump talking to Russians and all this other crap. I don't care. Like I said before on this program, I could care less about Eastern Europeans having a tiff or problems with Western Europeans. To me, they're all Europeans. And they're all part of the problem as far as I'm concerned. So they're all in the same boat. Just like they look at us all in the same boat, we need to look at them all in the same boat and worry about we need to worry about other things instead of Trump, his son-in-law, and people in his cabinet talking to Russians. I could care less.
It's emphasizing that thing we need to be concerned with and continuously using platforms like Time for an Awakening for is to come up with those solutions in relationship to a lot of the people that have been on over the years in talking about sovereignty, power, national formation, how to organize. These, as you say, these are the things that we have to be constantly laser focused on compared to how Europeans are consolidating amongst themselves or even bickering amongst themselves in relationship to who's going to be the dominant power of the moment. And you see, Trump's last thing in relationship to going over there and telling them that they have to pay their 2%, or pulling out the on this here. This thing that the around the whether dealing with the whole question of is there global warming and the Paris Accords, those things affect us in relationship to how we are most organized to be able to make sure that we are not affected by whatever decisions they make as they bicker amongst themselves. So I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Like I said before, we're in open forum this evening. You can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We've got a couple calls up here. I'm going to go to the phones. Before I go to the phones, I just want to read from another published report. They've been releasing some of Hillary Clinton's emails for public consumption. One has been released here that talks about, because some black folks that are not aware, they love the Clintons, both Bill and Hillary. But like I said before, to me, there's no difference between Bill and Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. The only difference is that one is brash and ignorant with his statements, and the other one's trying to be slick, but they have the same objective. Let me read this from a published report here dealing with Hillary Clinton. Says Hillary Clinton, newly released emails showed us Clinton asked to fly on separate planes than Michelle Obama in 2011. Hillary Clinton asked a top aide in 2011 whether she could fly on a separate plane from former First Lady Michelle Obama to Betty Ford's funeral, according to newly released emails. Judicial Watch released on Thursday more than 2,000 emails from Clinton's unauthorized private email server she used as Secretary of State. One of the documents revealed a conversation between Clinton and her Deputy Chief of Staff, Uma Abedin, about how she would rather not ride on the same plane as Michelle Obama en route to Betty Ford's funeral in Palm Desert, California. Hillary Clinton said, "I'd be honored to speak at the funeral," in reference to Betty Ford's funeral. "It's okay if me and Michelle Obama take separate planes." The recent email release allegedly shows Clinton receiving and sending more classified information via her private unsecured server. Many of the conversations revolve around the individuals involved with the Clinton fundraising foundation receiving favors. So we can see that they're releasing some of Clinton's emails. She wanted to go to Betty Ford's funeral and speak, but she didn't want to ride with Michelle Obama. So, you know, we take that for what it's worth. And if it means nothing to some folks, then it means nothing. So we just put that in our memory banks and kind of remember that in reference to folks that love the Clintons, love both Bill and Hillary. Just keep that in mind. Let me I'm gonna grab a couple of these calls here, Brother Richard. Let's go to 602. 602 area code.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. This is Brother Marcus calling from Memphis.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, it's surprising you were talking about that senator, your Cory Booker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these liberals, Jews, because that's what they are. When they say liberal, they're really talking Jewish. These people have been meddling with black folks, you know, for way back. They've been meddling. They've been meddling in that book when that little Bible wrote themselves in as God's chosen people. They wrote in that black folks were cursed in the book of the Hamitic myth with the story of Noah and his three sons.
Mm-hmm.
That story was written by Jewish scribes, see? And, you know, all through history, they've been tampering with black folks. They were instrumental in putting Garvey in prison. It was a Jewish judge, a Zionist judge by the name of Judge Julian Mack. The prosecutor was a Jew, see? Because the Jewish people who funded the NAACP,
yes,
you know, to fight against Garvey and Booker T. Washington using, what's his name, W.E.B. Du Bois. Okay, and it was ironic that at the end of Du Bois's life, Du Bois had to flee to Ghana. So he was fighting against Garvey at the end of his life when the U.S. government indicted him. He ran to Ghana, see, and he was fighting Garvey all the way. So these Jewish people here, you see, they are very cunning people, you know, and they commonly align themselves with black folks and say, well, you know, we have suffered and you have suffered and let us get together and fight oppression. But they got a pocket full of money, and we broke. See? That's the game they've been playing with black folks, and they use black folks as a buffer between them and the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Because they know that if the black folks weren't here, these people would do to them what Hitler did to them in Germany. Because a lot of people don't realize it was Ford trucks that were taking German troops to the front line initially. They should read that book by Henry Ford, The International Jew, written by Henry Ford. You see, so these people here, you know, as I said, the black people, we have no friends outside the race and very few friends within. You know, it's pathetic. And, you know, it just reminds me of the story that Malcolm X spoke about, the house Negro and the field Negro. You know, these field Negroes, that guy, that judge, what was his name? Judge Thomas, whatever, Thomas. It was
Clarence.
Supreme Court judge.
Yes. Clarence Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Once he got in there, he pulled up the ladder. He used affirmative action to get in the door, and once he get in the door, he pull up the ladder. You know, he fought against us. So, as the brother said last week, Brother Larry Arbery, you need to get that brother back on, because we are sick. Really, 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 really sick people, you know. And, you know, anyway, that's all I got to say. You take care, good brother.
Brother Marcus, thank you always for your call.
You're welcome. No problem.
Can I, Elliot, expand on a point Brother Marcus makes when we talk about the European Jewish community?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that we also have to make sure that we understand that African Hebrews are our historical allies, right? And our connection to the biblical reality is also an African reality that we have to just maintain and contextualize when we're talking about self-development. Because even Mr. Garvey had the Hebrew community as a part of the Universal Negro Improvement Association when they had the convention. And the reason I think that's so important, because we are in a time where we have to continue to develop the project of our historical coalitions of people from our own perspective, and make sure we understand that when we're talking about the is either the Hebrew tradition or stories, these are stories also about how Africans relate with Africans. That's the point I really wanted to bring up, because I think it's important when we're looking at, and you know, a lot of times you bring up, Elliot, about how we have to create coalitions or create relationships in order to build power. And I think that when we're looking at, as you know, the European Hebrews, or the European Jews, we kind of don't give as much time to the development of the Hebrews that are of our African historical and present, because there's a lot of Falasha Jews that are in Israel, or those Hebrews from that's a part of, I think that was Dimona, that our brothers and sisters that we need to create relationships with in order to help build the kind of infrastructure, political infrastructure, economic infrastructure we need in order to overcome or to maintain, to get the power relationship that we're entitled to in the present era. So I just wanted to, you know, bring that to the table if it made sense to anyone.
Yeah, well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I understand clearly what Brother Marcus was trying to what he put out there, because we do see where that European Jews have developed a strategy that they use all the time and to perfection, as far as they're concerned, as far as dealing with black people, seeming and posing, like Michael said, posing as friends, but you see that nothing really changes for us here. And there's been a lot of people posing as friends of black people. Like he mentioned, they started with funding the NAACP, also the Urban League, which started around the same time, early 1900s, with the Jewish money. So, you know, they've been using this strategy a lot of times, all the time, dealing with black people. And some of our people fall into this bag because they really want to be accepted by whites. And it goes towards what Dr. Fox wrote in that book, Addicted to White. Some of our people really have a problem not wanting to have a separate mindset from white people. It's like some type of strange symbiotic relationship that some of our people have when you talk about Europeans, European culture, and a European mindset. They think it's something really bad when you talk about excluding them from something. I mean, you've seen it on the plantation. You see it now. It's there. And when and I understand when you talk about the African Hebrews that were a part of the Bible narrative, but we also have to realize that when Alexander the Barbarian, I'm not going to call him the Great, Alexander the Barbarian went over there and burned those libraries in Egypt. They were burning them for a reason. And then they put out another, and not only burned libraries, killed a lot of the ancient priests at that time. And then put out another narrative by, what's his name? Not Constantine. Yes, oh, my goodness. During the Council of Nicaea. His name will come to me. When they put out another narrative dealing with the Bible and had the writers write all types of plagiaristic books in reference to the scriptures with European images, European thought and mindset, it was a reason why those libraries in Egypt was burned, and a lot of thousands of books and pieces of history and ancestors' writings were destroyed. So we have to understand what we're up against when we're talking about a mindset, a European mindset that had been around for thousands of years. It's nothing that has just developed or developed since we've been here on these shores. That mindset has been among Europeans for a long time, almost since their, interaction with civilized society. We started seeing a mindset that was different than other people's that was on the face of this earth.
That value that you were mentioning that Dr. Fox brings up, where that a lot of people of African descent bring up it when he says that everything white is good, superior, or valuable. Everything black is bad, inferior, or worthless. This imbalanced perspective is strengthened by a subconscious directive to distrust and similarly dismiss any activity or person that dares to challenge it.
That's what we were just talking about. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right. And it goes on in describing that value, e.g., the late Khalid Abdul Muhammad, revolutionary leader of the new Black Panther Party, and his 1998 million Black Youth March in Harlem, New York, or the late Samuel E. Greenlee Jr., author of the classic "The Spook Who Sat by the Door." It's that value that they have that gives credence and support to European Jews or Irish or Italian, of people of European ancestry. And to the system of white supremacy. When you believe that value, even as a black person, you're saying that you're willing to be dominated, and it's their value that we're those. And I want to make sure we continue to make the distinction. Those people who do that's not all black people, you know, because I think that's just so important for us to continue to emphasize. Also, there's as always been historically African people, black people who have said, I reject that value. I see myself as the image of God or God-like, like any other people would. And we're going to move in that direction. So I think that, but we have to, as you're saying, and as Brother Marcus is saying, we have to be conscious of the African people who accept that value, that white is good and superior, and those whites who believe that value, that they are good and superior.
Let's go to 216. 216 area code. 216? 216 area code. Okay, let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Okay, let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 215. 215. 215.
Hey, brother. Mm-hmm. Can you hear me, Brother Elliott?
Yes, sir. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard. How you doing, my good brother?
I'm good. How you doing now?
I'm doing fine. Our praise be to Allah. Brother Elliott, were you thinking about Michelangelo in the King James Version?
No.
Okay.
No. The one who convened that Council of Nicaea.
Okay.
Constantine, but Arius, I think it was Arius was the...
I'll think of it. Okay. But I mean, that ain't important. What they did was really important. But
right.
Go ahead.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. You know, Brother Mark is spot on what he was saying, you know, about these Europeans. I always said, of all these Europeans, I know it pains our people to have to face that, but these European Jews, they the worst of all the crackers. They're the worst ones against our... They're the worst oppressed against our people than the Irish, the Italians, the Polish, the Russians, whatever, Germans, whatever. It's them damn European Zionist Jews. They're the worst enemies for our people. And you know, Brother Elliott, on Jerome, Dr. Fox, yeah, I just like you and Brother Richard, I do have his book. I had his book. He autographed it for me several years ago. Excellent book, Dynamic Brother. No question about that. But you know, Elliott and Brother Richard, I wanted to, you know, kind of tie things up in the context with the Trump situation and all the stuff that's going on with this bogus holiday that took place this past Monday. Thank you for your service. Because LeBron James, you know, I'm sure y'all heard about his situation this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to put it in a certain context. Now, you know, like I said, Brother Elliott, we must be, like Dr. Fox, we must be totally insane to keep saying thank you for your service when many of these brothers have been killed by these cracker cops, have been military and distinguished of military veterans from wars like Vietnam, World War One and Two, Korean War. These brothers came home and got murdered by these devil cops. Case in point, I could say, you know about Mr. Kenneth Chamberlain, decorated United States Marine, got killed by the cracker cops in upstate New York several years ago. And if you and Richard get a chance, get the copy of the Scoop newspaper that just came out today with Brother Toby Rich, who they refer to as the mayor of Girard Avenue. He recounted about how his friend, because he was talking about Memorial Day, about how his friend, I think the gentleman's name was David Wilcox, served in Vietnam, came back, made it back, fortunate to make it back to America. And what happens to him? He get killed by a racist white state trooper back in the 60s. Now, I'm sure you and Brother Richard, Brother Elliott, probably sure that the state trooper got punished, right? Of course he did. His punishment, he got a promotion. His punishment, nothing happened to him. Basically, that's what happened. Nothing happened to him, you know what I mean? It's pretty much referred to as justifiable homicide. Even though Mr. Wilcox didn't do anything wrong, he just had his only problem, he was just black, you know what I mean? So the white state trooper back in the 60s thought that's from being black, and he a white man with a gun in the bags. He felt he had a right to kill this brother, and that's what he did. You know, and again, this man served honorably in Vietnam, but his life came to a tragic and brutal end at the hands of a white racist devil cop, you know, state trooper, whatever. So I guess that's thank you for your service, Elliott, you know? That's some kind of thanks we get, don't we?
I...
And check this out. And to show you how these devils have no take that number disdain for our people, and I'm sure you and Brother Richard, y'all very perceptive. See, sometimes we miss the language. That cracker out in Ohio, the district attorney, he made it very clear. You know, they fired the cracker that killed Tamir Rice. He got fired this past week. But the devil made it very clear to the media. Oh, he wasn't fired for that. And basically he's translated, oh, he was justified in killing that little nigger. Now, we didn't fire him. We fired him because he lied on this application.
Our people shouldn't take solace or look at that as a victory, because when they fire these cops, number one, he's not being prosecuted for murder because he murdered a 12-year-old boy. But when they fire these cops and make it public that so-and-so has been fired, the FOP, which is a national organization, they might be named differently in other cities, They look out for these cops. Now, he might be fired in Cleveland, but he'll go to Indianapolis, or he'll go to a small town. He'll get another job as a police officer. So,
no question about it.
I mean, he might lose his job in Cleveland, just like was it Darren Wilson?
When he got hired by somebody else in another town somewhere. You're right.
Well, I mean, he was fired from a job in another town and got hired in Ferguson.
That's
so,
right.
So those guys just bounce around. You know, they might be fired, publicly fired.
Killing and abusing black people everywhere they go.
Just like one of the most popular ones that, you know, that was out there for a while there doing the OJ trial, Furman.
They fired him,
but you see what he did. That was the best thing that happened to him when he got fired.
Sure. He on Fox News making six figures, still trashing black people.
Yeah.
Trash Obama, trashing black people all over. And I said, you racist white bastard, Q. I mean, an arrogant bastard, too.
But what I'm saying, Joe, is, you know, for anybody else under normal circumstances, that might have been a dark chapter in their life.
Oh, no question.
But for him, that was a bonanza.
Oh, I agree, because he's a white man.
He put up with a little smear, but it paid off for him.
Sure, I agree. Like Bill O'Reilly, when Fox fired that cracker a few weeks ago, he got sent out with a $20 million parachute. You know, like I said, when white boys get fired, they get golden parachutes. And like you said, Elliot, what they'll do, they'll make sure they'll wait for a few months to maybe 6 months to a year when this kind of fur will die down, and he'll pop up on CNN somewhere, you know what I mean? They'll hire that devil somewhere. Maybe he'll go back to being his old no-good racist bastard self, still talking crazy, but still making big money and stuff. So that's all, because whiteys look out for whitey. You know what I mean? Like I said, on jobs out here with the average black person, and even in some cases, when even the average white lay person, if they ain't got that kind of connection, they get fired from a job. They go through damn hell to get the unemployment compensation or whatever this dude. But these crackers, like the O'Reillys of the world, they get fired, and like I said, they get a golden parachute. And like you said, once the furrow die down, he'll be back up. Like you said, Kathy Griffin, they'll look out for her. They smack the hand. They, like you said, told her, don't do that again. And she'll resurface, like you said, about 6 months, if not sooner, when all this hooper die down. And she'll wind up back on CNN or one of the networks and stuff, because that's what they do. You know, they take care of each other. And see, Elliot and Brother Richard, in the context of LeBron James, with the incident that happened, see, LeBron said something that was so profound. And you see a lot of these other black athletes, they scared to stand up and speak with him and stuff. He said that, no matter how much money you make in this country, how much stature you achieve or acclaim you get, basically, you're still a nigga to these people. That's LeBron said in so many words. And he's right, because I look back at Brother Elliot and Brother Richard to Dave Parker, the great right fielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates, my favorite National League Baseball team. When he played for the Pirates back with Willie Stargell back in the 70s, he was here. His brother was winning MVPs, tearing up the league, and he lived in a gated community out there in Western Pennsylvania. He comes home, and what happens? He see a big racial slur painted on his house. And this was exact words, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. With all your fortune and all your fame, you're a stinking nigga just the same. You know what I mean? And we know what happened with Bill Russell. He won 11 titles up there for that racist-ass Boston, and yet they still ain't stopped them crackers from breaking into his house, spraying racial slurs, urinating, defecating all over his house. You know what I mean? So these brothers, they know what time is. But see, a lot of them just don't want to deal with the reality. And I bet you, Brother Ellen and Brother Richard, that not only LeBron James, but I bet you, and I said told this to you before, and probably Brother Ellen, I bet you so many of these black athletes, if they would be honest, they have got accosted by the police, and some of them probably had their heads, nightsticks upside their head. But see, Stardom brothers too ashamed. Or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, to come out and tell it, because they get treated no different than you and me. The only difference that them brothers have over that's different from us, Brother Elliot and Brother Rich, they got money, they got millions of dollars and stuff like that. But when it comes to getting treated by law enforcement, because when these brothers leave that sports football field, that basketball court, that baseball field, whatever the case may be, when they leave and get into their nice little Maseratis and Mercedes-Benz and Lexus and all that stuff, they are looked upon as black criminals and thugs like any other black man out here. And I bet you if we could talk to them brothers proud, they've been accosted by the police, beat up, probably done, probably had guns put in their face, all kinds of, because they get treated no different, you know?
You know, let me say something in reference to his statement.
Sure.
Because when after he made that statement, then maybe a day later, one of those reporters from ESPN, Whitlock.
Oh, that house nigga. Oh, he's terrible. Oh, Jason Whitlock.
Well,
he
made a statement about LeBron James don't know what it is to face, know what it's like to face racism. Now, mm-hmm. if you're black and you hear the young man, because LeBron is young, he's 31 years old,
mm-hmm.
And you hear the man make a statement, then help him out. Add to what he's saying.
That's right, Brother Elliot.
Don't try to, because listen, this boy wasn't always rich. He was 19 years old when he, or 18 when he came.
His mother was a single mom in Akron, Ohio.
He was 19.
He
was 18 years old when he came into the pros.
That's right.
And started making money. So for the first 18 years of his life, he grew up poor in Akron, Ohio. So he knows what it is when you see talking about racism. This idiot want to make a statement. Oh, he don't know what it is to face racism. You know, if you're black, it's best if you don't, if you can't add anything to what these young men are trying to say, whether it's LeBron James, Colin Kaepernick, Michael Bennett, any of these guys mm-hmm. that choose to speak, if you don't know what to say or you feel want to say something stupid, then just keep your mouth closed.
I concur with you on stuff, man, because, see, that's the problem. See, they always see Jason Whitlock has a history of doing this. He always comes out, and he's such a cowardly Negro. What he'll do, if it's something so blatant, like Charleston, when Charleston happened, he had to just call it straight up because that was so blatant. But when it's something like LeBron, he'll come with his little backslap, underhanded comments and stuff. See, Negroes like him make me sick and stuff. And by the way, Elliot and Richard, I close these last couple remarks. I saw the thing with Barkley did about racism. And like I said, down in Baltimore, they did it down in Baltimore. And brother, let me tell you, them sisters and brothers down there let him have it. They let Barkley have it down there. I mean, there's one sister whose son got brutally beat. This was happened before Freddie Gray and stuff. Her son got beat to death by the police. They 15 devil cops beat her son to death. And, man, she let Barkley say, how dare you come down here and siding with these racist cops against our people. She said, you don't know what it is to go through. I mean, she let Barkley, all that Negro could do is sit there with the dumbest look. I mean, she let him have it. I mean, you had a friend of him was kind of a little awestruck because he's a ball player, NBA Hall of Fame or whatever. But them grassroots sisters and brothers, they didn't give a damn about Charles' fortune and fame. They let that Negro have it. They got that Negro's ass so bad, Ellen Richard, that he even had to stop backing up for some of that. So, you know, he started, you know, I probably did it just for public consumption, but he started saying, yeah, well, you know, I admit that black people go through so much in this country, and if it is an issue between the police and that way they treat black people as opposed to white, I mean, they made that Negro say stuff that he didn't even want to say. I mean, they let him have it. And that's what you need to do. Let Negroes like Charles Barkley, Jason Whitlock to the world, let them Negroes have it with both bowels. If you're going to come, you better come right, Negro. We ain't got time for your foolishness. You going to come talking that wishy-washy Uncle Tom and your mama stuff, take it somewhere else. You know what I mean? That's the way we got to come at them Negroes and stuff, man. That's the way we got to come at them.
Didn't he do a thing with the somebody ahead of an alt-right piece?
Yeah, that was part of that. I saw that little clip. That was a part of that so-called special he did.
And you see the reaction. I mean, you see the assertiveness that the person that I don't remember his name,
the white guy,
spoke of while about how they're about white domination, and that is unapologetic. But Barkley and them trying to, and I felt it was so childish at the end, saying, "Well, you know, in the end." America is going to be brown. When this guy is talking about the reason why he feels there should be separation and white power, and he spoke about white power and white domination. Mm-hmm. That's their concern. White power and white domination. And, mm-hmm. and the challenge I have with us is that, and the challenge I have with mouthpieces and programs is like that, is because there's no speaking that black people want power, not jobs or better health care. We want the power to be able to define our reality and not only have other people respond to it, but have us respond to it in spite of the circumstances. Whites are poor whites, really. They're poor whites. Telling a ball player, an entertainer, this is what I want. And I don't care really about you.
Yeah, he basically told him that.
White man's country. And you know that.
Now, you're right,
and he just sat there with a stupid look on his face. See, but they want guys like that to conduct programs like that. Idiot basketball player, and he don't know much about that. Sitting there, that guy took him to school. I saw that little clip, Richard. That guy took him to school. He's sitting there with a stupid look on his face like he didn't know how to come back at him.
Exactly.
He shouldn't even be narrating those type of programs anyway.
And
he don't know.
And brother, that's what I was telling you. So when it first came out that Boston was going to be doing it, I said they picked the right. I said these crackers, they know which Negro to pick. They always pick these simple Negroes who they know got the sense that God gave a billy goat. So they it's the insult to a billy goat. But they know which kind of silly Negroes to pick, and they won't pick a conscious brother like a Richard Sherman. You know, a LeBron James, somebody that's very intelligent, that's well-read, know who they are, and got a little sense of who they are as a black man. But they'll get a dumbwit like Barkley to talk crazy, or they'll get some stupid sister like that do the show, Wendy Williams. They get silly people like that, silly Negroes and Negresses. That's what they get. They're the ones who they prop up there like that, because they know they no threat to white supremacy and stuff, so they go get them. And I'm going to tell you something, I'll close with these last two comments real quick, Ellen and Richard. Another brother going to be getting some flack here is the brother from the Eagles just signed, Torrey Smith from the, I think from the Baltimore Ravens. He came out just this past week. And he said that Colin Kaepernick is being whiteballed. You know, he didn't use the word blackballed. He said whiteballed and stuff. So you know, they wasn't happy with that comment.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Okay.
Yeah, he said he was whiteballed. So he said you're gonna sit here and tell me that Colin is not better than majority. He said he's better than a lot of these starters, much less backups and stuff. And he can't get a job. You know what I mean? But see, they show you how these devils are so racist. They don't like the brother. They don't like the brother, Joey Mixon, who's punched the white girl in his face who got drafted by the Cleveland Browns. Them crackers don't really like him either, because he punched that white girl after he called him a nigger. But see, they are so racist, and they hate the fact that young black men like a Colin Kaepernick stand up and speak against white racism and police brutality, that they'll hold their nose and let a guy like Joey Mixon play in the league, but yet because Colin stood up against that racist ass American flag and stuff like that, any black man that would even pledge allegiance to that old woman is insane anyway. Because Francis Scott Key, the author of that song, as you and the Tom from the Wicked listening or this well-known brother Richard and brother Elliot, was a racist bastard. He's a slave owner, racist bastard to the core. He made no bones about it. So why would I want to pledge allegiance to some that's like a Jew pledge allegiance to a Nazi fight song and stuff? So them devils so racist that they'll hold their nose and let Mixon play in the league because Colin stood up against police brutality and all that stuff and spoke out against this forcefully, and he didn't want to stand for the national anthem. They'll try to do their best to keep him out of the league, but they'll let Joey Mixon in the league, even though he punched the white girl in her face and broke her face, broke her nose, whatever like that. You know, these are some sick people, man. When he said the white man was the devil, our people didn't really grasp all what he was saying. They just heard the cosmetics part of it. But you look at these people's minds, so these are some sick people you're dealing with, man. They full of hate. They full of hate. They full of envy. They just got a sickness about them and stuff. And they always tell black people to raise themselves up, right? When we had Tulsa, Black Wall Street, what did they do? Because we was doing better than them back on Black Wall Street. They came and had to make up a lie about some brother rubbing against some white girl, and they justified them coming in there with guns, with helicopters, bombs, deputized soldiers killing and murdering black men and women and children at will. You know what I mean? These are some sick people, man. They don't want us to have. They tell us that they don't want us to live around us, but we try to do for ourselves. They come after us anyway. So this moving forward, Ellen Richard, when we get that Black Wall Street again, this time we can't be unprotected, like the ministers say. This time we got to have brothers and sisters out there willing to stand up and protect our farmland, protect our banks and stuff, because we know once we reach that plateau again, you know, they're gonna come after us again. So this time we have got to be ready. That's the bottom line, okay, Elliot?
Thank you for your call, brother.
Thank you, brother Elliot. Thank you, brother Richard. Thanks for the time.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Well, can the church say amen? Can we please say amen? Oh, man. The white man is up to his usual business every single day. Does he ever stop? Now, you were talking earlier about Cory Booker, who is nothing more than a front man for the white man. That's all Cory Booker is. Do you know that the president's daughter and son-in-law has given that Negro mucho dollars?
Yeah, I heard that, what's the name, Justin Kutcher, what's that guy, I don't know his son-in-law's name.
Kutcher,
yeah, gave him money. Yes. I don't know how much, but he has gotten money from him on a couple of occasions.
Oh, he's given them a lot of money. The thing also is this, nobody has never really held that Negro accountable for all of the money that Mark Zuckerberg gave him in regards to the schools in Newark. Nobody's done a forensic audit on that, nor have they ever done a forensic audit on that no good, filthy, stinking Hillary Clinton in regards to the donations that she received from the people in regard to Haiti. Now, you know, it's very interesting that white dog has come out this week bitching and moaning again as usual about how she lost. You know, my only question is this. Why can't the cracker just go away? Why must this cracker still be around? I mean, what purpose does this devil serve to the American people by sticking around? I don't see no value in this cracker at all.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Do you think, and it's a they thing, do you think they would rather have her or Elizabeth Warren?
I think if you're talking about the powers that be, those that back both her and Trump, they will prefer to have her no good, filthy bond. Because what will happen with Warren is she'll go after the money. She'll try to curtail their ability to be greedy, which now there is no curtailing of that. I mean, if you notice, all of these things that are going on in regards to Russia, it's a BS negotiation and fact-finding mission going on. Because if they really, really wanted to get a clear idea on what Trump and his family and associates have been up to, they would just start doing some forensic audits of their businesses, tax returns, business, private, and all sorts of other things. And then you would get a clearer understanding. And maybe they may know what they're going on. Now, one of the interesting things that may happen is if Trump tries to invoke executive privilege in regards to Comey testifying. Now, if he pulls that, then you know there's a real, real serious smoking gun.
And the other side of it, if he does it and the other Republicans allow it, you know that they're in cahoots with the direction.
Of course they're in cahoots with him. What would make you think that here it is, you have an entity that has the financial wherewithal to assist them crackers that they would not be in cahoots with them. I mean, think about this. Look at the beginning of wealth when Comey came into office and now with his wealth is. These are just simple, basic questions that the American people, the Neanderthal, is too stupid to look at, to think about, to rationalize, to do the necessary thing to see that they're getting screwed over. Now, I didn't see this, but I heard that the new job report came out, and it wasn't good at all. So where are the jobs being created that this buffoon in office is creating? He just went and did his thing over in Paris. He just alienated most of the people off of his last trip. And this is what the American people want. And these damn Negroes, all I hear them talking about is, if I vote, we will have a say-so. Your black behind ain't going to have no say-so in nothing other than what goes on local. Nationally, you're not going to have no say-so. You can't even get your act together to control your local. That was just proven to us in Ferguson, St. Louis. We as a people need to separate and step back from politics and figure out how we're going to sustain ourselves economically and culturally before we get into that cesspool. Because I would just like to see as more and more of these emails be released and the things that this filthy, stinking, no good Hillary Clinton said, how black women are going to respond and act, knowing that she talked so bad about their overseer, Michelle Obama. You know, what are they going to now do? Are they now going to chastise Hillary Clinton for being the filthy, stinking, no good racist that she is, knowing now that the proof is coming face smack dab in the middle that she's a racist, that she didn't like Obama, that she didn't like Michelle, and that she was just basically using them and put the pressure on them in the beginning, if the truth told, that she was able to get the job as the Secretary of State. Let's not play no games. Don't make it seem as though she brought something to the table as the Secretary of State. She basically blackballed Obama into giving the filthy cracker the job. But you see, revisionists of history will never tell that truth.
But, you know, I kind of, Elliot and Jay, I kind of still can see that this is a fight in the back room or down in the basement between the oil concern and the data concern. The ones who want to hold on to 1945 power relationship and those who want to move into, if we use Philadelphia's time frame, 2035. Because you see with Clinton, with Trump, who were the people that left? Eli Musk and was that Disney company? These are the people who are going to use, whether it be the entertainment industry as far as whether it be 3D and virtual reality data, as the means of controlling the future of energy and the minds of Americans in the world versus the oil, which is about oil and guns that were used to control and the media to use to control the minds of people in the world.
Yeah, but if you look at what's just going on and what just happening, the only people that's going to really benefit from this climate change move that El Demo did was the Saudi Arabians, maybe the Iraqis and Venezuelans and some of the other oil producing countries. It's not like America is going to be in a position to where they're really going to benefit from it, because they went over there to Iran and Iraq and tore them countries apart, but they never gained control of the oil fields. They never can gain control of the oil. You know what I mean? I mean, these things that are put into play, and I'm sorry to say this, And I know some of y'all gonna get upset out there, but this ain't got nothing to do with black folks. Y'all Negroes ain't got no face on and nothing that's going on here. Y'all don't make no difference to what they're doing. You can't do anything to stop them from doing what they're doing. You know what I mean? I mean, you gotta be real. You're not in no power position to stop these filthy, stinking crackers from putting their foot on your neck. They kill you when they want to. They do whatever they want you to do. They manipulate and they control you. They gave you a Negro by the name of Barack Hussein Obama, and now look at him. He just spent $8.1 million for a house. Now, come on, y'all. Come on, y'all. Where did that Negro get that money from? Seriously. I mean, we got to really be honest about what is our position here in this country and how we're moving forward and what are we controlling and what are we doing to place our families in a position to survive. You know, the white man just told you he doesn't care anything about the survival of even them. You know what's going on in the glaciers and all of that with the ice and all of the other things regarding climbing, you know, and things of this nature. It's quite obvious. So nobody could tell you that there's global warming going on in all of these things, but nobody wants to address it. Nobody wants to deal with it. Everybody want to play games. But we feel as though to solve the problem, the Democratic Party is going to be the ones to solve it. Here it is. These Negroes ain't even got a plan. That's the thing that upsets me the most with the Democratic Party. They have no plan. They have no vision for us as a people. They have absolutely nothing in place to motivate black people, honestly, if you have any form of intelligence, to vote for one of them filthy, stinking crackers.
And should they?
No, yeah. And think about this. They don't even have a Puff the Magic Negro like Obama in the waiting. You can't expect it from Booker because nobody respects Booker. Nobody trusts Booker. Nobody's going to vote for Booker on that level. They ain't even got no other Negro peen set up to come in and buck dance and shine and sweet talk them and do all the things that Barack Obama was able to do. Nobody. You can't even name me a Negro on the national stage that got the pizzazz to motivate this filthy, stinking, no good cracker. They're not
I wouldn't even think that we should. But I understand your point. I understand your point. But although I do think we have a vision, we had a vision, and I think that over time the project of the vision has increased, you know, and in relationship, we know that Africa is, as a continent, is that 22nd century move for African people. If we can really, as you say, we don't do, because it is not going to happen through those parties, or it's not going to happen through the American empire. It's only going to happen when people of African descent in the diaspora and those Africans on the continent, not the ones who are in control of the state power now, but those who recognize that we can't keep going the way we're going and survive as a people on this planet when these others, as you're saying, have made us continue to place us as devalued collateral damage in their development of their 22nd century. So we do have a vision because solar power and hydropower, Diop laid at least, even if he would be idealistic, which I hear some try to say that he was, at least he was looking at the natural resources and we have as one thing, the only thing that I believe we have as black people in North America or in the Western Hemisphere is that we understand to the length and extent that this, as you say, white cracker will go, and that military strategic knowledge is really, really important when you're going to wrestle with delinking
and hold and bringing up your own sovereign power. And that's the only saving grace. It's not going to happen through the European Union. It's not going to happen through the Democrat or Republican Party. It's not going to happen through the EU. And it's not going to happen through the American Empire or the Russian Empire. It is only going to happen. And it can happen. Well, now that may be me being passionate about that we have the expectation. But it can only happen when not all African people, but those African people say that we define this reality of this is what we're going to do. And the one thing we have to do is take the ownership of ourselves back first and foremost.
And listen, and Richard,
I couldn't agree with you more.
Excuse me again?
I couldn't agree with you more. The bottom line is, in order to survive on the planet, you're going to have to be self-sufficient and have the resources to survive.
Yes, it. And we have the resources. Now, I know you wanted to say something that way, but we have the resources. Now, do we, who know this, do we have the will? And that's where, if you don't mind me saying, Elliot, that where I think that Dr. Fox's book, you know, about being addicted to white values. And so, and Francis said it, and who was that? Fernand said it, and you know, Naeem Akbar said it. All of those said, unless we free our African mind, Wade Nobles, we are not going to take the risk that those, and we have historical examples here in North America of the Denmark Beeses and Ed Turner, the Mimia Abdul, Mimia Jamal, you know, Panther Party, the Marcus Garvey. We have the examples of individuals who personally took the risk. The Malcolm, the Martin, the Fannie Lou Hamer. We have those examples. So we can't say we don't know what to do or what the cost will be. The question is, will we be able to overcome the values that prevents us from doing just what you're saying we need to do, Jeff?
Well, let me just leave you with this. The one thing we must constantly say to ourselves on a continuous and everyday basis is the white man is your perpetual enemy. Something that the author who wrote that analysis, Dr. Haki Madhubuti, had the nerve to, many years later, turn back from. Had the nerve to tell me that he don't believe that no more. And like I said to you on this show before, I understand clearly he suffers from grandpa syndrome. So as long as we keep that in mind, that the white man is our enemy, then I guess we'd be all right. Because as you can see, anytime you have what happened to LeBron James, and you have a Negro get on the national TV and say what he say, and then Negroes wanted to bait him instead of just ignoring his black behind and going on about the business, all to entertain the no good Neanderthal, you're never going to win. Because there should never, ever be any type of response to a Negro like Jason Whitlock when he say that type of stupidity. You just have to ignore it. But for some reason, we want to entertain him in a debate, thinking that we're going to change the mind of a Sambo in the Coon. I ain't never seen in my time a Negro that's a Sambo in the Coon change his mind. And it didn't last long enough for it to be of any value, a.k.a. the Bulldogs, when Uncle Ruckus every now and then would have a visit. But what would happen at the end of the day? Uncle Ruckus would come back to being Uncle Ruckus. So how are you winning? How are you winning in that equation? You know what I mean? I mean, something's really seriously wrong with us when we feel as though we're going to be able to change the mind and the opinion of a piece of trash like Jason Whitlock. That to me, that's the amazing thing. And then you have Negroes like Michael Edward Dyson, one of the masterful, slick-talking Negroes there is on the world stage. Get out there and use those high and mighty words to say basically he's a dumbass and you need to pay him no mind. But he want to clean it up to make white folks feel as though he could articulate it in the King English that he's a dumbass, and they get off on it. You know what I mean? I guess he must be trying to get him a white woman, because, you know, that's one thing the white woman like is an intelligent black man that can speak the King English. She'll go overboard for you. You know what I mean? It's like that brother who I had to tell my niece the other day. I said, listen, baby, you going off to college in a few months, and I want to let you know, whenever a Negro walks up to you and he says to you, what's up, Ma? What's up, boo? If you don't run, I know you're going to be hook, line, and stupid for the rest of your life. So whenever they give you those cold words of, what's up, Ma? What's up, boo? You just start running. You don't even look at them. You just start running like you just saw a damn ghost. But if you stand there for a minute and you listen to it, I know you're a fool, and I'm going to feel very sorry for you, because that's when they got you. It is simple. What's up, Ma? What's up, boo? Talk to y'all later. Hey. Be good, brothers.
Thank you for your call, man. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. It's open forum. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We're in open forum this evening. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
No, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
No, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
That says there's a zero quota on blacks coming into the country, but it's a white country for white Europeans only. Now, in the Constitution, here's how the coding started working. The coding came up, they says, all the people. Every time the white society says, all the people, we the people, the American people, they are not talking about you. You are the people to be excluded. That's why in the Constitution, there's no place in the Constitution, not in one instance, does it ever mention the word slave. Never does it include the word slavery. Whenever they want to start talking about black folk in the Constitution starting out in the 1600s and 1700s, what they said is they used very broad and ambiguous terms to relate to black folk, like those who are indebted, those who are abundant, that species of property, to make sure that what they're deciding, and they use this when they met to form the Constitution in Philadelphia in 1779, when all the so-called founding fathers got together, what they said is this: let's not taint this document we're getting ready to create called the Constitution. Let's not taint it talking about slavery or about slaves. We're getting ready to screw over some people, but we don't want anybody to know about it. We don't leave no fingerprints. No fingerprints should be left on what we're getting ready to do. This is fact. For the first 3 days in the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, they kept the doors locked while they all debated whether or not slave and slavery should show up in the Constitution and what terms they should use. And they went out of their way to say that nobody ought to use those terms. We will use very broad and ambiguous terms. So when Thomas Jefferson rewrote the Constitution, he had to write it three times to make sure that there was nothing left in there, no fingerprints left of what was going to happen to a certain group of people. And so when you read the Constitution, it says, we the people you just had. All the people you just had. When the Constitution said that all men are created equal, they weren't talking about you. Because at the same time in the Constitution said all the people are equal. They had already classified the Constitution that you would be a three-fifths of a human being. They weren't talking about you, but somehow my people never understand that. They talk about the Constitution, what they call the founding fathers. The founding fathers knew the game. They set that up in the Constitution so that they can always track that with no fingerprints. When they said in the Constitution, for instance, that all people are created equal, they've been endowed by their God to have inalienable rights. To what? To life, liberty, and what? No, that's what it got you again. It wasn't for the pursuit of happiness. It was pursuit of property. They switched on you. Initially it was supposed to be the pursuit of property. Nobody on this earth got past the third grade without thinking people, white folk, that foolish to come across the oceans in 3 months of sailing on a boat with barely enough food and water to live and come to the United States looking for happiness.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're in open forum this evening, about 20 minutes or so left in the program. And you can get involved in the conversation, too. I'm sorry, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard, before we left for break, interesting discussion that you were having. Brother Jay out of New York was talking about, and kind of showed a little apprehension or speculation that our people could accomplish these deeds as far as becoming independent, of independent sovereign people again. And I know that that's going to happen. I have no doubt that that will happen. The time frame on it, I can't say. It might happen sooner than we think, but these things are happening all over. It's just that the lines of communication are not there. The access to communication that we know that these things are going on, and the coordinating of these efforts, a lot of times is not going on. You know what I mean, Richard?
Yes, oh, definitely, definitely. And that's why, so, I mean, communication is so powerfully important and when you're talking about organization. But effective communication is what is necessary. And you speak all the time compared to this entertainment or infotainment type of communication.
Now, I want to play for our listening audience a clip that I put up on timeforawakening.com. It was a speech that was made back in March, if I'm not mistaken, of this year by Julius Malema, who is used to be a part of the ANC. I think he broke away, and he's economic freedom fighters over there in South Africa. He addressed Parliament in reference to the brothers and sisters over there in South Africa. And I want to play this clip so our listening audience can hear what he said, if I can get this thing queued up here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Speaker, and the leadership of the EFF. This is a motion that seeks to unite black people in South Africa. And ordinarily, if leadership was provided, we shouldn't be having this debate, because the land should have been returned into the hands of the rightful owners. We all know that the Dutch gangsters arrived here and took our land by force. And the struggle has since been about the return of the land into the hands of rightful owners. Yet those who went to negotiate on behalf of our people during the negotiations sold out this fundamental principle which constituted the struggle against colonialism. So those who claim to be radical enough and who want radical change today should actually be in the forefront of agreeing that this constitution must be changed to make it possible for our people to own the land. It can't be correct that the less than 10% of the population owns almost more than 75% of the land. And those people who own the land happen to be, in an acceptable language, private people like individuals, trusts, and companies. But when you search deep as to who are these people, these are white people who are still owning our land. We remain a conquered nation, even when we claim to have democracy. We remain a conquered nation because white monopoly capital still owns the means of production, and at the center of that is the land question. The dominance of white people, it cannot go away, particularly white supremacy, for as long as land is not returned into the hands of the people. We are the only country where we say revolution has taken place, yet
those who were oppressing us have not lost anything after the revolution. We remain as we were even before 1994. So we are saying that black people, all of us, we need to unite and amend the constitution so that we can expropriate land without compensation. There is no white person who will understand that clarion call, because they don't know the pain of being landless. Only those who have gone through a passage of being landless will appreciate where we come from on the issue of the land. The issue of the land cannot be a campaigning issue. The issue of the land cannot be a rhetorical question. The issue of the land should be an issue of commitment. Honorable members, we have taken an oath here. And when we take an oath, we are simply saying we are loyal to the land. But how can we be loyal to the land which is in the hands of private individuals? We must be loyal to the land that belongs to us. Majority of our people say South Africa belongs to them, yet they do not have proof to show that indeed South Africa belongs to them, because many of them do not even know how a title deed looks like. Many generations died without even knowing how a title deed looks like. It is only through the expropriation of land without compensation that our people will be the rightful owners of this country. We cannot keep on saying South Africa belongs to all who live in it, yet we have nothing to show. Today, the ANC should come with the EFF. There is 6% available. We give it to you without no condition to amend the constitution and take the land. If you don't agree with us today, it means you are disagreeing with Honorable Ayanda Drodlo. If we don't agree with us today, it means you don't agree with your outgoing president on the issue of expropriation of land without compensation, even the Minister of Land. This is a matter that can unite black people. This is a matter that all of us should stand together and isolate white monopoly capital. This is a matter that can say to us, this is a genuine call which we as black people can identify with. So the ANC, 6% Shiona, Relefayona, RGL Lefase, Relimeng, RGL Lefase, Rare di Feme, RGL Lefase, Refebat Barna Babele Marae, Babele, a place to call home. Honorable Nzimande, we have already started taking the land. If you vote against this, it's a waste of time. We are already giving our people the land, and we are not ashamed of that. People of South Africa, where you see a beautiful land, take it. It belongs to you.
Honorable Ngwenya Mabila.
Welcome back. Time for Awakening. And Richard.
Yes, yes.
That's just an example of things that's going on around the world that you don't see played on CNN, NBC News, World News Tonight. They don't want black people to know about speeches like that that's being made. And those the brothers and sisters over there are not playing when they're talking about taking that land from white folks. And it's happening now. You heard him say it.
Man.
He was just in Parliament. It was plenty of white folks sitting in this. If you see the clip, there's plenty of white folks sitting in there. They heard what he's saying. Malema is a young man. He don't look like he's over 40 years old. He might be. He might be around that. But those young brothers and sisters over there are not playing when it comes to what he's talking about in relation to land.
Which is the same issue that Mugabe was having in trying to transfer the land back to his people under because of the same condition. But you know, Elliot, if I may, I like to, because you know that stimulated that question where people of the African people of South Africa have the land question that they have to take back. I think that we should consider, because it may be a personal view on my point, that we should consider that what we, as I listened to Brother Claude Anderson,
What we have to take back is the ownership of our own personhood, you know, our agency as a people. And that's, and to me, because here in North America particularly, we at least acknowledge that this land belongs to the native populations of this land. What they took from us and made property was our own ability to define ourselves as people, a part of the human family. And it, and nobody can give you back that. You have to take that. And that's what that, that, that the, from that perspective of the, what they say, mind, body, and soul, you know, that's where our struggle is. And those things that will help us take back that. I think that that's a political question. That's a power question. And that's the step, as the brothers and sisters in South Africa talking about taking the land. You claim that. For us, is we need to claim ourselves so we're not criminals with this country and this constitution and this, in this nation state, whether it be private or federal or state, claimed us as already as people who were breaking the law just by trying to be. That's powerful, you know, that, you know, when you talk about what goes on, that this country defined Black people as lawbreakers when we all, just by being here. If you ran away to get your freedom, you was a lawbreaker. If you tried to marry and control your children, you was a lawbreaker. If you named yourself in the and defined yourself and your God in the image that you prescribed, you was a lawbreaker.
Yeah, you know, but Richard, I see all that as being one and the same struggle. Yeah. I don't look at what they're doing on the continent as being separate.
I agree.
You know, white folks want to make it seem like it is, but that's why they don't want Black people knowing what's going on in Zimbabwe, knowing what's going on in South Africa, knowing the struggle. The last time Black folks was even unified about anything in reference to South Africa was when the conversation of Mandela was came up. And you had so many Black folks here, even bourgeois Blacks, only because of pressure from grassroots Blacks that was talking about divesting from white companies and things of that nature. And all of a sudden, white folks start feeling a little hot in their chair and started making sure that Mandela was let out of prison. It's not that they cared anything about Mandela. Mandela had been in prison almost 30 years. They didn't care anything about what was going on in South Africa. But once Black folks started becoming unified about that issue of South Africa during the time when Mandela was released, then you've seen the real power of unified Black people all over the place once you start talking about taking money out of white folks' pockets. So our people do have power, whether our people here realize it or not. We got a lot of power, and we can make a difference here in this place dealing with this man. See, that's why he don't want this.
The point about the media you were making.
Yeah, and that's why he don't want this conversation of reparations reaching the floor of his executive branches of government. He don't want it to reach the floor because that has everything to do with what those men are talking about on the continent and here and in the islands and in South America. It has everything to do with it. But he don't want that conversation to reach those hallowed halls, as he termed it. And, you know, speaking of that, when Cam Howard was on in, what was that, March, I think it was, and talked about the new H.R. 40 bill, and that he only had 24 people, representatives, that had signed on to the bill. They needed 100. Since then, I'll give you a little update, it's 28 members that have signed on. Now, 1, 2, 3, 4. Again, 4 of those members is the same thing that was in March. 4 of those members that signed on is white. So no more white folks signed on, but 4 more Blacks have signed on. But it's a lot of Black legislators that haven't signed on to this H.R. 40 bill. And some of our people will start holding their feet to the fire, some of their representatives, and ask them, why haven't you signed on to this H.R. 40 bill? And plus, listen here, Richard. Cam said that they needed 100 votes or 100 people behind it to bring it to the floor of Congress. And at that time, I read some other bill talking about they wanted a congressional statement saying that Jews were abused by Germans or something. You remember when I read that?
Right.
And it was 125 people that had signed onto that bill, and a bunch of black, probably every member of the Black Caucus had signed onto that bill. Now, you still got, it's 47 members of the Black Caucus. And two of them are senators. Right now, you got 24 that have signed on. So you got almost 20 members, maybe a little over 20 members of the Black Caucus alone that haven't signed on to this H.R. 40 bill. And what good are you as a lawmaker if you can't get two of your white colleagues to sign on to your bill? All of these so-called black elected officials, they sign on to white bills all the time. Their names are signed on to these bills. You can't get one. If you got 47 members of the Black Caucus, one or two white people to sign on to this bill, and that would give them enough to bring it to the floor of the Congress? What good are you as a lawmaker? I mean, what good are you if you can't get one of your so-called colleagues to sign on to this bill? One. Some of them people been in down there in Congress for 20 years or longer, 30 years, some of them. You can't get one or two white, your so-called brother and colleagues to sign on to this bill? Either you don't want to, or you ain't no good as a congressman. And I think it's a little bit of both, or a lot of both. But I'm just giving the our listening audience an update. Since Cam mentioned this in March, you got four more that signed on. Now it's 28 members that have signed on to this new H.R. 40 bill. They need another, 78? No, excuse me, 20. You need another 72. 72 people, sponsors, to bring this thing to the floor.
And if it goes as it's going, one a month, that's 72 months.
Well, you know, some of our people can do, you know, and that's another thing that we need to establish in every one of these cities, some type of watchdog group to watch over these people that's supposed to be representing other black folks in these halls of government, whether it's senators or congressmen. Watch over them. See what they're doing. See the bills they're signing on to. And see what they're not doing. And hold their feet to the fire. And plus put the information out to the public. Because a lot of the public don't know what these clowns are doing. They don't know. They come out there with a suit on and come all in the neighborhoods and people running, falling all down to give them the best seat in an auditorium or the best seat in their church where they can sit up front and pontificate about what they this and that, about what they're doing. Watchdog groups in every city ought to be putting out information what these people are not doing, and hold their feet to the fire. Hold their feet to the fire. They're supposed to represent you. Why haven't you signed on to this H.R. 40 bill? Why can't you get one of your white colleagues, possibly two, to sign on to this bill? I'll sign on to your bill. You sign on to this bill. That's how politics is supposed to work. Maybe it don't work that way for black politicians. Quid pro quo. You scratch your back, I'll scratch yours. I scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Whatever. Scratching. They're doing a lot of scratching.
So it sounds like people are being, they might get scratched and some blood come out, so they don't want to be touched.
Yeah, well.
They thin skin, I'm trying to say. Yeah, because you have to be thick-skinned in order to if you're going to go out there and actually be bargaining and negotiating, and then you got to have something. You can't come with your hand open or with a cup talking about, like, I'm here to trade. That's what those assemblies are about. They're trading resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be looking at their community and saying, "I have this is what," just like the brother you said from South Africa saying, "that land is ours. We're trade, and what we're going to trade is our will to take it."
Yeah, they've been doing it, which has put them in odds with the police and everything over there. See, that this is, I'm telling you, when these things move forward, Richard, it's going to put black folks at odds with some of these black folks that want to be gatekeepers to this white supremacy. You could see it clearly. You can see it clearly.
And that's why you don't hear about it. Because it puts all of us at the crossroad. You know, they call it the Elegba cross, to make the decision of what side we on. And side, I know in some language might be, well, what is right? What is righteous? What is ethical? What is to your self-interest?
Yeah, and you know, if they ask those questions, then it wouldn't be even a debate. What is right? What is ethical? Because the issue of reparations is right and it's ethical. If they claim they believe in a Bible or any type of a higher spiritual calling, if you damage somebody, you're supposed to repair them. That's one of the first things that you do. This country has never repaired black people for the damage that they have done. And we still operating out of that damage now.
And you know, when you say that, Ellie, you know, in doing the tour is one of the things that I have to always bring out to people is that the reason why one of the debates around should enslavement continue is that the question of who is going to pay those enslavers, how the reparations was going to be paid to them. And even in the state of Pennsylvania, that was a serious question. That's why when they did deal with that Gradual Abolition Act, it was a question of dealing with the reparations to the enslavers because they had to be paid back for the loss of their so-called property.
And it's kind of ironic, Richard, that's the same thing that's going on over there. You heard Malema say that we want this land without compensation. Mm-hmm. So that same debate is going on among Europeans now that was going on, what you described, over 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. A land that you stole from other folks, you want to be compensated if you got to give it back. Now, I don't care what type of spiritual right, I don't care what you believe in, that's spiritual and right. Show me something like that in any type of spiritual book, that you stole something from somebody, and when they find out and want it back, that they got to be compensated for it. That's in the European's mind. That's their mindset.
And that's why Dr. Fox book on this whole thing of values, and it brings up another that historical a linchpin that we kind of hear come up over and over again, because that's in IT, that's what the issue was. Even though we fought and won the war, beat three mighty empires, we had to still pay back in reparations France.
Mm-hmm. That's why Haiti is the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere now.
But that's because you want to, and it gets dicey. That's why it's so important for us to stay centered in our own self, because you want to play in their arena. So to play in their arena, you're going to pay. But if you say, "Well, I don't need to play in your arena. I don't need to use the basis of your law to govern myself. I don't need to use the basis of your trade relationships to work with my brothers and sisters. I don't need to have commerce and to be able to innovate based off of your innovations in order to be able to determine and define my ability. I don't need that. Therefore, I can create laws for myself. I could be able to create innovations for myself. I could be able to trade with myself. That I could be able to educate or be in my own right mind. And that has nothing to do with you, and it don't have to be against you. That's just doing for myself. So that becomes our self issue we have to wrestle with.
Richard, we come up on the end of another program. It's an interesting discussion, always when we have open forum with our listening audience. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, I know.